welcome to everyone on the call. It's Angelo Campioni from studentnewsready.com here, and today I have the great pleasure of speaking with Ken McLean. Now, Ken's a spiritual author who's written 8 books, produced 3 movies, and written over 100 articles in the spirit-mind-body framework. He's also written a math geometry book and has a BA in political science and a BS in computer science. So, welcome, Ken.
It's good to be here, Angelo. It's really good, especially to talk with my friends in Australia. Australia seems to me to be a country that's really waking up and waking up fast, and it's just amazing to see all the people in Australia getting onto the spiritual path.
I think in many ways Australia's a mini US in many senses.
Yeah. Yeah, so the good and the bad, right?
Yes, exactly.
Although it'd be pretty hard to get as bad as we've been the past 12 years.
In terms of the financial situation?
In terms of, sort of a rogue government and fraudulent finance. It seems that we do everything in fullness, right? When we do something good, we really do something good, like the Marshall Plan, and, we defeated Japan, and we basically completely rebuilt their society. We rebuilt Europe, and then we're sort of this rogue nation that starts wars and overthrows governments. Oh, God, I tell you, it's really a trip living in the United States. I have to say, if you have any self-awareness whatsoever.
Well, I've heard Eckhart Tolle talk about how at this moment there seems to be a heightened level of both the insanity and the awareness growing, and from what you described, it sounds like that seems to be certainly the case for the U.S.
Yes, I would absolutely have to agree with that, and absolutely, what's happening, I think, is the population increase on the planet is raising the background vibration on the plane of thought, and we're all feeling it. And people who resist are having a very hard time of it, and people who are going with the flow are finding their spiritual path and awakening, and it's amazing. You're right. I mean, things are polarizing in the sense that people are feeling things a lot more strongly now.
All right. So, Ken, let's start from the beginning. What came first, your passion for the spiritual aspect or the scientific one? And I suppose, how did you actually marry the two together?
Well, in my case, the spiritual aspect definitely came first. What happened with me was when I was 3 years old, my mother died of leukemia. She was only 27 years old or 28 years old. And I remember walking up to the casket and seeing her body there, and I couldn't figure out why she didn't get up and give me a hug. I mean, there she was. Mom, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, I just had this, I don't know what you'd call it, this epiphany, this understanding. It wasn't anything like, oh, my God, I feel this incredible, I see her spirit there. I just had this understanding that who she was, the inherent nature of who she was, wasn't in that coffin. It wasn't in that casket. I sort of got this idea, and I sort of had this remembrance. When you're 3 years old, you're still kind of a little bit closer to your spiritual origins than you are when you're 57 like I am. And I just had this understanding. Mom is actually a spiritual being, and the spirit is separate from the body. It was an amazing thing. And ever since then, I've had this inherent understanding of the fact that every human being, that all life on the planet is spiritual in origin, and that we're here having a temporary physical experience. So I don't know how you know something like that at 3 years old, but it's definitely possible. So for me, the spiritual definitely came first.
And so the scientific one, that was something that afterwards your mind, as you got older, your mind kicked in and started to become more analytical, and I'm guessing you started to question things in a different way.
That's absolutely true. In college, I studied math and computers, and a little bit of physics and a little bit of chemistry. I haven't had any graduate education, but I learned enough about science to get really interested in it, and I also learned enough about science to know, or for me to feel anyway, that science didn't have all the answers. And then about 10 years ago, I got interested in geometry, and I began to investigate three-dimensional solids, which are called polyhedra. And when I did, Angela, I did a very thorough mathematical analysis of these figures, the most popular figures, like the five platonic solids, and some of the other, what are called semi-regular polyhedra. I discovered that nature uses something called the phi ratio in many of these most important figures. And I also found out that life itself in the human body is designed around this phi ratio, which is a perfect division. And the thing that about the phi ratio that's really important to me is that there's a very spiritual aspect to it. It's absolutely perfect division. Aesthetically, phi represents the perfection that really can never be attained in the physical universe. And so it represents the perfection and non-physical nature of spirit. It's there. This phi ratio is there in nature, I believe, to remind us all of who we really are. And so the really cool thing about it is, Angelo, I started to get more and more intellectual, and I started to forget my spiritual origins, and then I studied this geometry stuff, and I went, oh, my God, this is amazing. I mean, there it is. There's spirit right there in nature. There's spirit right there in these polyhedra. And it turns out that these polyhedra are the building blocks of nature. If you study the periodic table, you'll find that, you know, crystals have a hexagonal shape, a cubic shape, and some viruses and bacteria have shapes which are dodecahedral or icosahedral. So anyway, when I found that out, and when I found out that this phi ratio was at the heart of some of these really important polyhedra, it just blew my mind. It just absolutely blew my mind. And so I wrote this book. It's called, amazingly enough, big long title, A Geometric Analysis of the Platonic Solids and Other Semi-Regular Polyhedra with an Introduction to the Phi Ratio. I just couldn't stop writing this book. I mean, I spent like a year on this. And so what I've done is, for me anyway, personally, I found a perfect marriage of the spiritual and the physical. And that's the basis behind all of my work.
Mm-hmm. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess for people that haven't heard about your work, I mean, you've told us a bit about it now, but how exactly would you describe for someone new what it is that you actually do?
Well, my passion is to remind people of their spiritual heritage and to debunk the deluded theory of materialism that consciousness arises from the interaction of matter and energy. To me, this is the big lie on planet Earth, Angelo, and it's the basic stupidity that underlies all of the problems of mankind, because it's a complete and utter denial of self. So I guess I'd have to say that in a nutshell, in my work, I try to remind people of their inherent spiritual and divine nature, and I try to do this in a practical, common sense fashion. I try to explain spirituality and align it as much as possible with our scientific understanding. To me, those who believe in the diluted philosophy of materialism and promote it reduce a human being to little more than a biological automaton. They're responding to stimulus from the environment. And such a philosophy, to me, devalues the inherent divinity within all of us. For every human being and every life form is what I call a native state consciousness, a pure spirit who has decided to have a temporary physical experience. That's what this crazy life is, Angelo, that we lead here on planet Earth. It's just a vacation, a sort of a trip to the amusement park. When you're on the roller coaster sometimes, you know, you really do feel terrified. Sometimes you feel exhilarated, too. It's an experience to be cherished, a beautiful and terrible experience, but it's only temporary. And after the ride's over, you get off the machine, you get back in your car, and you drive home. And that's exactly what happens when the body dies. The spirit transitions back to native state. You know, this fundamental principle has been understood by every culture on Earth. It's only very, very recently, really during the past 100 years, that life has begun to be devalued on a sort of massive scale. World War I was shocking, really, to the collective psyche of humanity, because the depravity and the tremendous number of deaths opened up a glimpse into the sordid and deeply suppressed nature of humanity's consciousness. And then World War II and the wars that followed it did the same thing. But it's my opinion, though, that such an opening to our dark side, our collective unconscious, was inevitable and necessary if we were to advance as a species. You know, when you're stuck in a bog, you're going to make a big mess getting out, right? So, if you want to make progress in any therapy, you need to confront the emotional issues that are holding you back. And that, I believe, is precisely what we're doing right now. The population increase has led to an enormous increase in the speed of thought and a raising of the background vibration within the subtle but very powerful plane of thought. Everybody feels it. To understand this, just imagine a big party with several hundred people, and then imagine a room with only two or three people in it. Now, that big gathering has a much greater potential for something to happen, right? Spontaneously. And it has also been shown that evolution usually proceeds in leaps, not smooth, gradual rises. This get back, I don't know if you've ever read the book by Malcolm Gladwell called The Tipping Point.
No, I've heard of it.
Okay. Yeah, well, basically, Malcolm Gladwell says, that's exactly what he says. He says, when things get to a certain point, they go viral. They sort of explode into the mass consciousness. And so I believe that humanity is setting ourselves up for a quantum leap in consciousness. You know, but the question is, are we going to move back into the old patterns of war, conflict, and hierarchy and follow the leader? Or will we move into a new era of harmony and cooperation? To me, mankind is manifestly an adolescent species because the very first and most basic requirement of a sane, mature species is internal cooperation. So that's my long answer to your question. That's how I describe my work. I believe, you know, it looks like the world's going to hell in a handbasket, but I believe that the whole 20th century was the most violent century in the history of mankind. I believe that this is actually an opening of our subconscious, and that all of these old thought patterns that we've suppressed and we haven't confronted are coming up now. They're bubbling up to the surface because the light is shining in and we're having to deal with them. And, you know, for the World War I and World War II and all these other wars that have started on the planet, you might look and say that we haven't done a very good job, but I think overall the trend is positive. I think people are waking up, and I think that people are beginning to see, are being able to spot dishonesty in our leaders, in our politicians, and in our religious leaders too. What do you think about that? Do you think it's all going to hell in a handbasket? To me, I think the negative that's popping up is sort of coming up for inspection, and I think that that's a positive. I think it's a necessary thing.
Yeah, well, certainly it's been my experience that when negative things do happen, that there's always an opening for some good to come out of it. And you mentioned the wars, and though there was many atrocities that happened in the wars, and I think that there's, like with the years that have gone by, there's a lot of good that's come out of those things as well. I guess I don't want to be too general. I think I'll bring it back to myself. When you mentioned materialism, for example, I was certainly in that frame of mind in my 20s, and I was a tax manager working in an accounting firm, working towards becoming a partner, and I just thought that's the way life was. You work hard, build up a status, and make a lot of money, and at some point you enjoy the fruits of your labour. But what happened when I was 29 was that my brother-in-law, who was 37, had a stroke and died.
Wow.
And that was a really big shock for me, because he was essentially along the same path as what I was doing in terms of he was a bit more advanced in that he had a family with three children and building a dream home and all of that sort of thing. But essentially it was the same path of building material wealth for thinking that that's what it's all about. And so when he died so suddenly, it suddenly had me question, you know, what am I doing here? What's the truth? Is this really all there is when, you know, you work so hard and within such a short period of time, you die, you can die and that's it.
Yeah.
And so that started me on a journey of discovering more of myself, my true nature, and has led me to here where, you know, I see life exactly the way that you've described, as, you know, that we're spiritual beings experiencing a physical body for a short period of time, and but it's just a joyous journey if that's the way that we want to see it. If not,
exactly. Well, you know, I think that a shock like that, especially when you see a loved one die, is something that can really put you on the spiritual path. And, you know, speaking more generally, I think that the wars of the 20th century really have forced the sort of the bulk of humanity to confront what we really want, where and where we're going, not only as individuals, but as a species. So, again, I mean, a war is horrible, and I don't wish a war on anything, anything or anyone. But I think that, sort of strange or bizarre as it may seem, I think that, you know, war can actually wake people up because it's a shock. And one of the things, Angelo, that's happening in the United States is that our wars have been sanitized ever since the Vietnam War. I mean, the government has basically refused to show coffins coming back. You know, all we hear is patriotic slogans about how great the United States is doing in the war, or we hear nothing about it at all. And so people in the United States are completely divorced from the effects of war. But even so, I think there's a lot of people in the United States that are waking up now. And I think the election of Barack Obama was the response of the American people saying that we want change. We want a completely different kind of guy, a person in the White House. And certainly I don't know whether this is going to be a good change or a bad change, but certainly the people in the United States spoke out strongly for change. And I think it's because, you know, a lot of people have seen what's, you know, the United States has been doing, and I mean, in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a lot of people are feeling that their pockets pinch now, and people are beginning to understand that the United States is bankrupt, and it's really coming home. And I think this makes me really, really hopeful that we can have some really fast positive change going in the United States, because the United States tends to sort of lead the rest of the world. Whatever we do, the rest of the world tends to follow. And I just hope that we can step back on the positive path, because if we ever do, boy, I think we can be a real force for good.
Yep. Well, that's what usually ends up happening when the scale goes too far one way. There's a lot of momentum to go back in the opposite direction.
Right.
So, okay. So, in terms of giving some practical advice or examples for people that say are dealing with various issues that, you know, feel very real to them and painful, What advice can you give them?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because over the past 5 months, I've really been confronting my own shadow side. Like this morning, I mean, I woke up, I felt good, got up out of bed, I started working, and then I just started having all these thoughts of, man, your life is crap, buddy. You're not going anywhere. I mean, what's wrong with you? And all this stuff. And what I've learned to do when that happens is simply to just, I used to just go, oh, well, that's just my shadow side, and I have to resist that. I have to push it off to the side. But what I've been doing right now is I've been just being with those emotions and being with those feelings and totally being honest with myself and acknowledging them. And I've also been doing something called, I don't know if you've ever heard this, emotional freedom technique.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, it's called EFT, where you yep. tap on various meridian points of the body. And I have to tell you the story. I've told the story a couple of times. It was a few months ago, and I was cooking dinner, you know, and I was feeling okay. And then all of a sudden, literally, I sort of started spinning in, and I'm going, what in the heck is going on? And I literally just had to get out of the house. I put my shoes on, and I told my wife, Jenny, I said, Jenny, I'm just feeling like I'm going crazy. I have to get out of here. And I walked. I took a walk for about 20 minutes down the road, and I kept fighting with myself. I'm going, why are you feeling this way? You shouldn't feel this way. You're on a spiritual path. What the heck is wrong with you? And then all of a sudden, I just stopped. I stopped in the middle of the road, and I said, look, you can't solve this problem intellectually. I can't reason this problem away, right? I can't psychoanalyze myself. I'm going to have to confront exactly what I feel. And I stood there in the middle of the road. This is a dirt road. There were no cars coming. And I felt all these horrible, yucky, crappy feelings. And I just said, okay, I'm just going to be there with my feelings. And after about 5 minutes, I started to feel a little better. I went home. I had dinner. And an hour later, I felt really good. So my suggestion is if you're feeling those feelings, number one, they're completely natural. If you're feeling negative feelings at this time on the planet Earth with the energy moving so fast, you're gonna feel negative at some point in time, unless you're a complete master of thought, which I'm not, and I don't know anybody who is, although I'm sure there are probably a few like Mr. Tola. And the second thing I would say is that spirituality is actually extremely practical, because if you don't understand who you are, how can you deal with anything, right? Mm-hmm. It's like when you hit the wall and you're laid low by your shadow side, those who believe that there are biological robots, materialistic automatons, are really going to have a much more difficult time getting out of it. Those who understand their inherent spiritual nature are going to be able to transcend their difficulties much more easily. So I would say that spirituality is eminently practical and necessary, especially in these times. So the first thing is, you know, understand that you may feel negative feelings, and when you do, don't try to intellectualize them. Don't try to suppress them. Just be with them. Confront them. You know, acknowledge them. Be totally honest with yourself. Do emotional freedom technique if you need to be, or if you need to, you know, you can find your own counselor, find your personal counselor or your mentor, and have them take you through it. Because in this day and time, Angelo, we're all coming together. I really believe that we need each other now more than ever, and we can't be an island. No man is an island, as John Donne said, right? Mm. We need to stick together. We need to find help. And those are my two suggestions. You know, stay on the spiritual path and deal with your emotions.
Mm. I think it's a good point that when you said you were walking along the road and you said, you know, I'm on a spiritual path. I shouldn't be going through this. It's interesting how, I guess, sometimes people can take spirituality as just being another story to add on to their life and say, well, now I'm on, you know, I'm spiritual, and so nothing bad should happen to me. And, you know, it's a story, another story that's created by the mind. Whereas what I hear you say is that it's really about allowing whatever comes up for you, allowing it to be there and watch it and just let it be there without resisting it.
Absolutely. And you've made an extremely good point, really, because that stories, I mean, everyone's life is filled with stories. And when I was sitting there on the road, I was trying to create another story, right? I was saying, oh, this can't be happening to me, as you say, right? I'm on the spiritual path. Why, you know, and I was trying to make up a story because I'm perfect and I'm spiritual and this can't be happening to me. But then I just said, okay, look, you know, no more stories. I've got to acknowledge what's happening to me. And for me, I mean, I've had hundreds and hundreds of hours of counseling. And I'm feeling my onion is just being peeled back and peeled back further and further. And I'm reaching into my shadow side, not willingly, unwillingly, because I don't think anyone would willingly choose to think dark thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all want to think positive thoughts, but sometimes when we think positive thoughts, those negative thoughts come up. And Now, another thing I wanted to say is that, right, a human being is physical and spiritual and mental and emotional. So there are four components. And if you neglect any one of those components, I think you're going to have a harder time, because, again, I believe we're coming together, not only as a species, but individually. All of our four components have to be united. So we have to unite our feelings. We have to unite our intellect and our ego. We have to unite our physical being, and we also have to recognize our inherent spiritual and divine nature. And sometimes that process can be kind of tough. I don't know anyone who's been on this blissful spiritual path that's never had a pitfall. Mm. So I think we're all sort of working through all of these old memes and all of these old thought forms in the bosom and the psyche of humanity and within ourselves. And this is so exciting. It's so exciting to be alive right now, Angelo, because, you know, again, we're all in this together and we're all confronting these things together. So I just want to tell your listeners, you know, don't think that you're on an island. Don't think that you're doing this all by yourself. Man, there's billions of us. Mm. There's billions of us going through the same thing.
Yep. Yeah, and in many ways, one thing that I've noticed is that being on a spiritual path, or one of becoming more aware of what's happening within, in many ways, it makes things more difficult, because you can't just ignore things anymore. It's like you have an understanding, and you have to do something about it. It's like if you don't, there are consequences.
Exactly.
To ignoring things, whereas I think, I think back before I got involved with the spiritual path, and while, you know, there were difficult issues to deal with at work and various work situations, whatever happened in my personal life, I was able to just sweep it under the carpet and right. move on. And right. whereas nowadays it's entirely what happens in my personal life, I have to face it. Otherwise, it comes back to bite me on the bum.
It certainly does, and I think that's happening to everybody, Angelo. I mean, as the energy moves faster and faster, you know, I think it's Esther Hicks that uses the example, right, when the car is going at 200 miles an hour and you hit a bump, you're going to go flying. If the car is only going at 5 miles an hour, it's not a big deal. I think within the last 100 years, the energy, the background vibration on this planet has increased exponentially. And I think now that anything that you resist, it's going to come back and bite you right on the bum really, really a lot harder than it used to.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's interesting, because while on the one hand it seems like, because of that heightened state, that sometimes things can feel difficult, at the same time I also have an understanding or knowing that I can allow things to be fine as they are as well. And as soon as I come back to that allowing point, it's like everything does seem to flow a lot better.
Wow, yeah, that's exactly true for me. You know, and we were talking a little bit before the show that I'm fire. It's hard for fire to allow. It's hard for fire to just sort of sit back and relax and allow. And that's been my main struggle in my life, is just to allow. It's just to, okay, just I can still remember my dear old father back when I was a kid saying to me, Kenny, just relax. But Dad, I can't. Dad, I'm so excited. Dad, I don't want to do this. You know, and I sometimes feel that I really haven't changed much in 50 years. But I'll tell you, though, you know, when you feel that high, you know, you feel the lows much, you know, worse, yeah. Much more strongly, but you also feel the highs much more strongly.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I wrote this book, Dialogues, Conversation with My Higher Self, it was just, I was in a state of ecstasy for 4 months. It was absolutely unbelievable. I've never been able to reach that point consistently again, but I've given up trying to go back to that point, right? I'm just living my life now, but
okay. I guess while
it's awesome.
Yeah, while we're on that point, how did that all come about? I guess if you can give the listeners a bit of a background of what that inner voice or that dialogue that you had with the inner, what that was about.
Right. Well, again, it went back to when I was, when I was a kid, and I saw my mom there, and then that was sort of the basis of it. I sort of had this sort of instinctual or inherent understanding, and then I sort of didn't do much with it. And then someone, I think it was my brother, this is about 15 years ago, he said, Kenny, you've got to read this stuff. And it was by this guy by the name of Lee Carroll, who used to be a former Christian minister in San Diego. And one day he was at an amusement park or a carnival, and a psychic, his wife said, come in and see this psychic. And he goes, I'm a Christian. I don't see psychics. I know God. I know the Bible. Well, anyway, his wife convinces him to sit down in this chair, and the psychic goes, oh, my God, do you know what you have? And Mr. Carroll goes, no, I don't. He says, you have a being that's right next to you, and he calls himself Kryon. And this being wants to speak to you. And he went, oh, oh. He started laughing and laughing and laughing. Anyway, about 6 months later, he's in the shower, and hears this voice talking to him. He starts writing this stuff down. Well, the first line I ever read of Lee Carroll's really just hit me. I mean, it was just an insignificant line. I read the book. I picked it up, and I just went, wham, and it just hit me right between the eyes and the sixth chakra, and it just went all through my entire being, and that sort of woke me back up again. And then I started listening to the tapes of Esther Hicks, her, what does she call them, the Abraham tapes, for about 6 months, and I realized that, this channeling stuff isn't something esoteric. It's something that every single person on the planet can do and should do. And so I was listening to these tapes by Esther, and there are all these questions that nobody ever asked. And in fact, I even went to one of these meetings, and I tried to ask my question, but she didn't call on me. But people were asking all these other questions that I said, okay, look, I want to ask questions too. And then I read, Neil Donald Walsh too. The same thing. And so I sat down in front of my computer one day. I came home from work, and I said, blah, 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 whatever. And all of a sudden, I started getting answers. So this energy started coming through, and it felt really, really good, Angela. That's all I can say. It just felt totally, totally cool. It's something, if you experience it, it's 100% good and 0% bad. It's just, it's pretty hard to explain other than it's a feeling, it's a knowing, and these answers started coming through, and I wrote this book. It turned out to be this book, Dialogues, Conversations with My Higher Self. And then a few years ago, in 2005, my father died. Now, my father and I had sort of a typical father-son relationship, right? He was old school, and I was new school. So we didn't get along too well, but after he died, the day after he died, Angela, I went out for a walk, and all of a sudden he was there. And I went, Dad, you're dead. You're supposed to be dead. And anyway, he started talking to me, and we had this whole conversation. It lasted for a month, and I actually wrote it down in this forum that I used to have, and I turned it into a book called I Love You, Dad. And that was another remarkable experience. And so all I can say is, Angela, if I can do it, if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Right. And so you actually saw him?
No, I'm not visual. I'm not really good with visual, but I'm really good with feelings. That's how I communicate. And what happens is there's this feeling. There's sort of this carry wave of feeling, and then there's data that comes on top of it. But the most overwhelming thing is this overwhelming feeling of well-being. And he was like, it turns out after we kept having these conversations, my father and I, he was calling me the old man, right? Because he was back like an 18-year-old kid, and he's bouncing around, and I'm going, man, you are just like a little kid. And he goes, well, of course, that's how we all are. That's how we all are. Spiritually, we're just these wonderful, wonderful beings. We feel fantastic all the time. And, I had my lifetime on Earth, and sometimes I feel like I didn't do such a great job. But now I know that every ending is a happy ending. And that's another thing that I want to tell your listeners. All endings are happy endings. All stories end with a beautiful, wonderful ending. And that's something that, you know, in your dark, deepest, darkest moments, you know everything's gonna turn out perfect. Mm. When you go back to native state, when you transition out of that body, man, you are gonna feel so freaking good. Sure. That's something that I have yet to experience, but it's something that I know on this sort of deeply fundamental level.
Mm. Well, on that point, I guess I'll share with everybody an experience that I had a few years back. I was snorkeling at the beach, and I found a rock pool that had maybe a foot of water in it, and I was wearing a wetsuit, and I was just wading there in the water, and all of a sudden I realized that the temperature of the water matched my body, like there was just a beautiful temperature, so that I couldn't really feel my body anymore. It was like a perfect match to my body's temperature. And then I realized that there was no sound because I was in a rock pool. There was no waves going into it, so there was no sound. And right. My breathing had really slowed down to the point where I couldn't perceive my breath anymore. And so I thought, well, if I close my eyes, I wonder what'll happen. And so I closed my eyes, and then the most amazing thing happened. I expanded way out, and the world disappeared, essentially. And there was nothing except me. And it was oneness. It was like, wow. I was one, and there was like nothing, and there was everything. It was all me.
Yep.
And I got this sense that this was what happens when we die, that this is where we go. And it was blissful. That was the other thing, was that there was no thought. It was just pure joy. And I had a really strong sense that when we die, this is where we go. There's, you know, it's not a heaven or hell situation. It's just a oneness.
Yeah. Well, I think it's probably different people will have different experiences, but that oneness, that feeling of well-being, that feeling of joy, that feeling of just excitement and well-being, that's the common denominator to being a non-physical spiritual being without a body. So that's why I always say, you know, that regardless of what you will experience, it's going to be really, 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 really good. And it's really awesome that you had that experience, because I have a friend, David Miller, who's both his parents died early. One died of cancer, one died of a heart attack. And he, when he was about 45 years old or so, he had to go into the hospital because he was having some health problems. And he was on the table, and they sort of gave him some drugs, you know, to put him out. And all of a sudden, just like you, he rose, except he didn't go out of the universe. He rose up in the room, and he saw everything that was happening. He's going, oh, my God, that's me down there. Hey, that's me. That's my body, right? And you saw the doctors and the nurses, and they're kind of operating, and he's going, oh, my God. And anyway, when he woke up, he remembered everything, right? It wasn't like a dream. It was like, he says that, you know, some people will say, well, you were just dreaming. No. He said, I was there. I was aware of every single thing that happened. And when I got back into my body, I knew that's what put him on the spiritual path. And, you know, for me, it was just reading a line in a book. You know, for some people, it might be like for you, maybe your brother dying, or maybe being in a pond, or, you know, it can happen at any time. Oh, I have to tell you this funny story. My brother John, who's also on the spiritual path. Now, our father was a devout Catholic, and he didn't believe in any of this woo-woo, New Age stuff. Anyway, this was back in the in the 60s when people didn't believe too much in that stuff. Anyway, he's about 5 years old. He's walking down the street. All of a sudden, he goes out of his body just like you did and David did. And he goes, oh, my God, I'm not a physical body. I'm a spiritual being. Oh, my God, this is great. So he goes, I'm going to go in and tell Dad, right? So he opens the door, and he goes down the basement, and the old man is in there, you know, like hammering stuff, you know. So little John walks up to Dad, and he goes, Daddy, I'm not a physical body. I'm a spiritual being. The old man looks at him, and he goes, yeah, sure, kid. I'll see you later. Go outside and play. And oh, you have to hear John tell us. And he said, and Kenny, he says, that's when I knew that adults didn't know everything. That was the funniest bloody story I've ever heard. And, you know, we just would laugh. We go, and whenever I talk to him, that usually come up and we'll go, and we'll think finally of our father. But, you know, I don't want to say that my father was this mean old guy, because he was a spiritual warrior. And this is another spiritual story I have. You know, about 2 years before he died, we would talk on the phone every Saturday. I would call him up, or he would call me up, and we'd talk sometimes maybe only for 5 minutes, sometimes for half an hour. But 2 weeks before he died, he said, Kenny, I know I'm going. It's time for me to go. You know, I've been meditating. I go to church every day. I bring my rosary, and I meditate, and I say my rosary, and I'm comfortable. I'm happy with myself. And then we started talking. I said, you know, Dad, my idea of the really way to go is like I'm walking down the street and all of a sudden I just keel over, right, and I'm gone. And he says, yeah, Ken. He says, that's how I'm planning it. He says, I'm going to be walking down the hallway in the house and I'm just going to kick over dead. Well, guess what happened? 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from my stepmom. And she goes, you know, Dad died. Dad just died. And I went, okay, where did you find him? Oh, he said, well, I just went into the bedroom. He was in the living room. He got up, and he walked. He was walking into the hallway, and he dropped dead. And I went, oh, my God. He called it. I mean, this guy called his own death. It was like, it makes Babe Ruth, I don't know if you know about American baseball, but Babe Ruth pointed to the stands, yeah. And then he hit the home run. Yeah. Well, this is like, because when I thought about my father dying, I thought, oh, I'm going to have to fly out there, and I'm going to have to hold his hand, and he's going to be screaming and yelling, I don't want to die, I don't want to die. Man, this cat, I mean, he showed us all how to do it. He dropped dead. He called it just like that. Boom. And he was gone. Split instant. So I always refer now to my father as a spiritual warrior.
Mm. Oh, that's
awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, Ken, so let's just talk briefly about another book that you've got out at the moment called A New Paradigm of Thought. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Well, that one is actually an 8 e-book collection. It's a collection of a book I wrote, two of the books that we've already talked about, and also a book I wrote called The Vibrational Universe, which is a complete overview of the spirit mind-body framework, and my idea of what the laws of the universe are and how to sort of practically apply them in a common sense fashion to life. And I also include two books by, oh, what's that guy's name? Famous spiritual author in the United States. I always forget his name. My mind is blanking out. Anyway, it's called The Science of Getting Rich and The Science of Being Great.
Wallace Wattles.
Yeah. This guy, when you read those books, I mean, you could tell this guy was really, he was really channeling spirit. These books are really fantastic. Yeah. And I also have another book in there called What Do You Do When All Hell Breaks Loose? That was based on a couple personal experiences of mine. I don't know if that covers all 8 of them, but anyway, it's an 8 ebook collection. I call it A New Paradigm of Thought because I think that in order for us on an individual level and on a species level to make it to the next level, we do need a new paradigm of thought, right? We need to throw away the old thought forms and the old patterns of thought. I mean, not all of them, but, you know, the ones that are negative. Throw away those old ones. And the slogan on the book is, A New Millennium Requires a New Paradigm. A new paradigm of thought, and I firmly believe that.
Yes, that it reminds me of Eckhart Tolle's new book, A New Earth, and it's essentially the same sort of thing that he says. You know, we're a new millennium. We're coming into a new consciousness. that we haven't seen before, and it's absolutely necessary.
It is. It's absolutely necessary. It really is. And it's like, again, it's just, it's so exciting to be alive at the time. Sometimes I don't believe that, like this morning and even a little bit this afternoon, I'm going, oh my God, oh, this planet Earth, sometimes it's so hard being alive. And then other times, like now, I'm just feeling so fantastic. I'm going, oh my God, I mean, this is so wonderful. I mean, who could even think any negative thoughts? So that's so,
sorry.
Life.
Sorry.
No.
So for our listeners that actually right now want to get started in changing their lives for the better, what would you specifically advise them that they can do right now?
Well, my guidance has been telling me personally to make a decision. I have so many things that I'm interested in, and sometimes I tend to just sort of get a little bit scattered. And my guidance also tells me that the most important thing you can do right now is to find a desire. Right, something that lights you up, something that, you know, as you're going through your daily routine, sometimes you might not even think about, what do I want, right? What makes me feel good? People don't ask themselves these questions, and they're the most important questions that we need to ask ourselves. And all the things I do in every day, what makes me feel the best? And if there's nothing that makes you feel the best, then you need to step back and take a look at your life. This one guy, actually it was this marketer, taught me this thing called a mind dump. And I think that's something really important, what you can do. I don't have the steps of it exactly in front of me, but essentially what you do is you write down every single thing that you know you have to do. You just keep writing them on a piece of paper. It doesn't matter how many pages you use. You write them on a separate piece of paper. Until your brain is like completely exhausted, you can't think of anything else. And then what you do is you say, okay, now what are my considerations about this? Right? What have I been thinking about this? And then you write down all the negative thoughts you have about, oh, I have to do this because if I don't, you know, if I don't go out and find a second job, I'm not going to be able to pay my mortgage and I'll be out on the street or whatever. And then you write down all the stuff that could possibly be negative about until you've just exhausted yourself, right? And then the final step is, okay, what can I do about it? What are the positive things I can do about it? And then you write down all those things. So you end up on a positive note. Then you go back and you take a look at that huge list of things you have and you prioritize it. Because there are going to be some things that you've assigned really, you know, big importance that aren't really that important. Then you take, you know, 3, 4, 5, whatever, 6, 7, 8, 9 things, and you make a separate list and say, okay, I'm going to get these done. You get your priority things. And then you go back and you take another look at your list, and then you reprioritize again. I'll tell you, just doing that mind dump really worked for me. It really did because, in fact, I think I'm going to do another one this weekend because I'm starting to feel a little bit pressured and stressed again. Mm-hmm. Mind dump is a great thing to do when mm-hmm. you're feeling pressured. But mainly, just ask yourself the question, what do I want in my life? What makes me feel good? And mm-hmm. write that stuff down. And then spend 5 minutes every day doing it. You know, if your life is hectic, you got kids, you got a job, and you don't have time to do anything, you can find 5 minutes. Mm. You can find 5 minutes to, even if it's something like, you know, I really, really love to sit down at night and read a book. Well, then spend 5 minutes and read that book every single night. Just make the time to do it. And you'll find out that what happens is the more time you make for it, the more time you want to make for it, and your life kind of just coagulates or regulates itself around the things you want to do more and more and more. Mm. I'm not telling people to quit their jobs, but I am telling them, you know, you really need to identify what makes you feel good, what lights me up. And if you can't find that out by yourself, you know, even if you do the mind dump or whatever, then go find your mentor. Go find your trusted colleague, your mentor, or a trusted counselor, and work with him, because it's the best money and it's the best time you'll ever spend. Because once you get yourself straightened out as far as where you want to go, where your path is, man, there's nothing stopping you, and you feel really good too.
And I think you're spot on there that ultimately we're here to feel good.
Yes.
You know, we somehow brought into this idea that you know, life's meant to be hard and a struggle and all of that sort of stuff. And I think it's, you know, just a misplaced or misguided way of living, because
it is.
There's just so much to enjoy and so much fun to be had if we allow ourselves to go down that path. And I think, as you say, the mind dump and the spending the 5 minutes a day on that is a good way of slowly starting to turn that boat around, because there's a lot of momentum with what we've already learned in that preconditioned mindset. But it does take a bit of time to slowly start to turn things around so that you do start to see life in a more positive light. But, you know, you've got to make a start somewhere, and I think that's a great way.
Right. Yeah, there's also one more thing I want to say, in that, you know, I get a lot of communications and emails from marketers who, you know, the guys who claim that they get up and they made $86,000 today and they live their life in their pajamas. And I used to think, well, there's some secret code. There's got to be some magic formula, right? I just haven't got it yet. So I would search for it and search for it and search for it. But what I realized is that there's really no secret codes or, you know, magic formulas or recipes that can bring me or anybody else happiness and success. You know, if there was some recipe, some brainiac would have discovered it already, right? I mean, human history is at least 5,000 years old. To me, here's the real secret. Life is designed so that individuals are empowered, and everyone is here to find their own joyous path. And believe me, you really wouldn't want it any other way. If there was a formula for success, life would get really boring after a while. If you could have anything you wanted simply by reciting a formula or going through some prescribed action steps, you'd wish fervently for a challenge, right? Mm. You know, we're all creative geniuses here on Earth. That's why we came here. We came here to create our lives. We're all physical masters playing the game of incarnation in order to learn more about ourselves and to have fun. And so that's why I really want to encourage people to find their passion, begin to act upon it. Again, even if it's only for 5 minutes a day, you'll find, you know, those 5 minutes, best part of your day, and you'll look forward to them and you'll feel refreshed.
Yeah, and I think if there is a formula at all, it really lies within yourself. It's that it is finding that joy yourself. That's the formula for each one of us.
That's right, and that's what Mr. Tola tries to do in his seminars. I mean, he found enlightenment at one stroke, right? And so he holds these seminars. He tries to tell people how to do it, but there really isn't any way to tell people how to do it.
No.
Right? No. There really is. I mean, he's an inspiration, right? And I hope that I'm an inspiration and you're an inspiration, you know, to find your own path. But that's what you have to do, right? You got to find your own path.
Yes, that's exactly right. Anyway, Ken, we better wrap this up so that we don't make this too long for people. But look, I think you've given us some really great information and certainly lots to think about. Now, for everyone that's on this call, you'll see a link at the bottom of the email that you received to listen to this interview that'll take you to Ken's website, where you'll be able to have a great selection of products that you can choose from and really extend what you've heard today. And I really encourage it, because I think that Ken is probably somebody who's, I think, one of the top people out there on this spiritual field that helps people to get through to that next level, I suppose, of finding that inner peace. So, I'm really encouraging you to go to that website. And I suppose as a final point, if you've enjoyed this interview and you're not a member of studentisready.com, I encourage you to join the free mindfulness series that's being offered at www.studentisready.com. And there you'll find some in-depth discussion about finding peace, joy and freedom through mindfulness.
Please visit Ken at his website, kjmaclean.com. That's kjmaclean.com, where you can find inspiring and informative articles, books, movies, and Ken's personal coaching and other self-help services.
So, Ken, look, it's been a really, really great pleasure to speak with you. I think you're extremely energetic and fun-loving sort of guy, and I've gotten a lot out of this call, so thank you.
Well, so have I. I have to tell you, I had a ball, and this is one of the very best interviews I've ever done. I really had a blast, and if you'd like to do it again sometime, I would love to.
Great. Thanks for that, Ken. All right. Well, we'll speak soon.
Okay.
Okay, then. Bye for now.
Okay, we'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.